Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We are rolling through the Monday edition of the program, but as always, I want to encourage you to download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a minute. Good first hour breaking down all of the chaos, all of the insanity, all of the weekend madness. Buck, we just got, during the commercial break, official confirmation on the kickoff time for what will be your first ever college football game. In 2 weeks, every time I say in 2 weeks right now, I still think like it's COVID. Remember, in 2 weeks, everybody's going to be dead
just
for the last
weeks.
18 months. We will be in Tuscaloosa, Alabama for the Ole Miss game against Alabama, which should be a well of a football game. 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central on CBS. We'll have the Outkick bus tour there as well. I'm telling Buck that you're going to question your entire life choices, Buck, that you've never been to an SEC game before. Because first of all, a ton of people are going to love us there. Secondly, the girls, as a single guy, you're going to be like, this is the best collection of good looking women I have seen maybe in your entire life. I'm just telling you in advance.
We need all of the Clay and Buck listeners in the Alabama, Tuscaloosa, broader area to show up at the tailgate party so that I can actually get the full experience. That's what needs to happen here. We need everybody. We're putting out the Clay and Buck flag for everyone to show up at this Ole Miss Alabama game, which is, you tell me, it's just like a big giant celebration, festivity, party, the whole thing.
I really believe this. I think SEC football, Southern tailgates, are the most fun events in the world of sports that our country does, and I'm not sure there's a close second. So I know exactly where we're going to be broadcasting from, by the way, because we're doing the pregame show. I'm a part of the Fox broadcast pregame show. We're going to be live from 9 a.m. Central to 11 a.m. Central. We'll be at the Innisfree Bar, which is a really popular bar in Tuscaloosa, which will be filled with Alabama and Ole Miss fans pregaming, getting ready for that college football day. You'll be able to come and see me and Buck. Allie, our producer, will be there. And we're going to have an incredible day. Going to go to the game. Game kicks off at 2:30 Central. And I think Buck is going to finish this day, and he's going to be like, this is the greatest, most fun sporting event that I have ever seen in my life. I really think that. I think by like an hour into it, that's what you're going to say. Before any of the game even happens, like by 10 a.m., you're going to be like, how did I not know that events like this existed?
It's because I went to a college with 1,600 students where the people in the football team were my size.
Yes.
That's how I didn't know these things existed.
So it's going to be fun. So put that on your calendar. If you're in that area, we're going to have an awesome time. But I wanted to hit this as we start off the second hour of the program. I actually saw, of all people, CNN put this out, Buck. So we just talked as we finished the first hour about the strike in Afghanistan that killed an innocent man and 7 children. That news came out on Friday. But as we are sitting here on Monday morning, getting ready for what should be this pursuit of the $3.5 trillion budget plan, the infrastructure bill, and everything else, I want you to listen to all of the things right now that are confronting the Joe Biden and his administration. Okay? So this is a significant deal, Buck, because we had talked about it a lot. What was the Senate parliamentarian going to rule as it pertained to trying to make citizenship for 8 million illegals?
Right. They were making it a budgetary. The Democrats pretended that amnesty for about 8 million people was a budgetary matter. Therefore, they should be able to squeak it by through the reconciliation parliamentary trick and not actually even have real legislation passed by the United States Congress that would legalize a group of people the size of the entirety of New York City.
Yes.
That's what they were trying to do.
So that gets shot down. Okay. This is a big deal, I am told, by people who follow foreign policy significantly, and it's certainly a big deal because Biden said, hey, we're going to be the adults back in the White House. They somehow upset France so badly that France has pulled all of its ambassadors and representatives out of the United States, something that's never occurred before. because we didn't include them in some sort of submarine pact with Australia and England. You've got over 12,000 people, illegal immigrants, under the bridge in Del Rio, Texas. We mentioned the drone strike that killed 10 innocent people, including 7 children. The FDA panel, Buck, rejects the idea of booster shots by a massive magnitude, which Biden had made one of the foremost components of his goals to get COVID under control. Joe Manchin is saying that he doesn't want to have a vote at all now on the $3.5 trillion budget this year, is the latest news. Kyrsten Sinema has come out and said she doesn't support the drug plan. You can't even get budget reconciliation if you don't have at least 50 votes. And there is now a debt ceiling battle, which also threatens whether or not this infrastructure bill can be passed. That is all disastrous for Joe Biden. Buck, I was sitting looking at this list and I was thinking over the weekend and I thought I would hit you with this question. Can you name anything that's going well for Joe Biden right now?
No, this is what we've been saying now. It's felt this way for the last couple of months. Now, we both think the Biden administration is just one long, I'd say a comedy of errors, more like tragedy of errors, but it's one long series of missteps and blunders. But lately, especially because of what we've seen with the changes in COVID policy, the big surges in COVID numbers that have occurred this past summer, there's not even talking points to deploy. They don't even really exist about the successes of the Biden administration. What you really have, in many ways, mirrors what you saw in California, where Gavin Newsom was able to rally Democrats to his side by pretending that Donald Trump is on the ballot. This is what they point to, which is also why, you know, over the weekend, Clay, they reinstalled fences and there were all these riot police deployed in Washington, D.C.
There were more media than there were protesters.
There were more journos from Politico and the Washington Post, it seemed, than there were actual protesters for the people who are being held in and have been held in solitary confinement for months, in many cases for nonviolent crimes that amount to obstructing a government process from January 6th or perhaps destruction of property. And yet that was a big focus of the media of the weekend. Clay, there is nothing they can say about the Biden administration that looks positive right now. And if, as you point out, the reconciliation bill does not become a massive, we just shoehorn everything into this, get whatever we want, spend like there's no tomorrow, which is kind of what they're doing, then the Biden agenda turns into what in year one going into year two? What do they put on the scoreboard? I mean, really, you and I are pretty good at finding ways to argue different points of view. If someone said right now, Buck, you're the new Jen Psaki, which that would be interesting. How would you position Biden's first year? I almost can't make fun of her for saying things, you know, for making it about Trump or babbling nonsense about things, because what is, you know, it's like there is a point at which even a great defense attorney doesn't have much to work with a client. Year one Biden administration is a client that's going away for a long time.
I'll tell you what they're going to try to spin. And this news just came down, by the way. The Supreme Court is going to hear the Mississippi abortion case on December 1st. So I think what they're going to do is the same playbook that Gavin Newsom ran, orange man bad, and they're going to take away abortion rights. They're going to lean heavily on that as their calling card going into 2022. And if Manchin holds back and actually sticks to his guns and they don't do this massive budget for 2022, or wait until 2022, then I think the only argument Biden will have is hey, we have to have more support in order to enact our agenda.
What about Sinema? You're giving Manchin all this credit. Sinema's come out swinging today,
yes,
saying, you know, they're both obviously in this position where they could play spoiler, and they both benefit from that given the realities, the political realities in their respective states of Arizona and West Virginia. But, you know, Sinema's basically said, if you guys play any games, this was just today in Political Playbook, you play any games with here's what's happening. The far left,
yes,
Democrats in the House are saying we're going to nuke the infrastructure bill in an effort to try to get more of what we want in the overall spending
bill. And just
to
reset for everybody out there, the infrastructure bill passed the Senate. and they haven't allowed it to be voted on in the House because the idea was once infrastructure happens, then the senators like Sinema and Manchin are just going to be like, peace out. We're not involved in this $3.5 trillion. So the progressive, like this was the whole battle over whether these were connected or independent bills that Biden had to try to clean up after he said he wouldn't sign one if the other one wasn't passed. So this is rearing its ugly head, and just to kind of set the tone there.
And Sinema is saying if Pelosi, well, really, it's AOC, the squad, and the progressive caucus in the Democrat House. They play any games, though, with this process as it has been promised by Pelosi so far, that she will then not play ball going forward on the overall spending bill.
So everything could collapse.
So everything could go down on this one. I mean, if she holds firm, look, it's also kind of amazing that we're acting like an additional $1 trillion or $2 trillion of spending is like fiscal sanity, given that we've spent $6 trillion over the course of COVID that we weren't anticipating. But the Biden agenda, all the other things they're trying to shoehorn into the massive bill, Clay, that's the stuff that, first of all, there should be just straight up legislation for, but they're hoping to find ways to put it into reconciliation. Famously, some parts of Obamacare got through via the reconciliation maneuver, which people felt like was a huge abuse, especially for a massive new entitlement, et cetera. But do you think Manchin and Sinema hold strong on this one?
I do. I mean, and we'll talk about this some, but all of it tied together, Joe Biden's presidency is on the ropes.
Well, it's only year one, though, man. You know, it's only year one. They got a lot of lies to tell in year two and a lot of orange men, bad fear mongering. And, you know, I'm with you, but I wish we were having an election in
right now,
60 days, you know, or whatever it is, November. I'm not doing the math in my head right now. I wish we were having an election in November because it would be a political bloodbath for the
Democrats. It would be like 1994.
A year we'll have to see. Watch the news as I do. I'm always seeing these signs of inflation, Clay. You know, you got fast rising home prices, federal government spending and money printing, which we were just talking about. The list goes on. Every one of them reinforces my decision to buy gold and to get ahead of this by taking action today. Because I know that gold is something that is a store of value. That's protection. That's why gold is being bought and purchased by so many. And when you can buy it, own it, hold it, it's all the better. My partners at the Oxford Gold Group have made precious metals that can be delivered to your home. There's nothing like real gold on your doorstep. Buying actual gold is not complicated. My friends at Oxford Gold will help you. That's who you need to call. They'll explain everything to you. Having real gold delivered to your home or having real gold as part of your IRA, it's just a phone call away with Oxford Gold. Give them a call, 833-404-GOLD, and learn how you can have real gold in your IRA and delivered to your door. That's 833-404-GOLD. Call Oxford Gold Group now, 833-404-GOLD.
Half their brains tied behind their back, just to make it fair. Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Welcome back to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. And, you know, AOC's Tax the Rich stress got a lot of attention last week, right? We were all watching this play out where she shows up at the Met Gala and you got everybody who was on her side, of course, saying, oh, my gosh, she's so chic. She's so avant-garde. She's so spreading the message. Fancy, fancy, all this sort of stuff, Clay. And we say, hold on a second. You're at a $30,000 a ticket event, $250,000 a table. You are someone who drives around in a new Tesla, lives in a fancy apartment building. I have friends who know where in D.C. And you're talking about taxing the rich as though that's some big statement. It turns out that the woman who designed her dress knows something or perhaps doesn't know enough about taxes. Designer Aurora James, who had the Tax the Rich dress, she's the one who came up with it. She's, according to Fox Business here, she has an LLC. I'll get the short and sweet here. The company racked up three open tax warrants in New York State for failing to withhold income taxes from employees' paychecks totaling $14,000. The company's been hit with 15 warrants in total since 2015, and the IRS placed 6 federal liens on Cultural Brokerage Agency, LLC, totaling $103,000.
Yes.
$100,000 in unpaid taxes from the fancy dress designing LLC. I mean, I just wondering, like, maybe not the person that would be the first you'd think of to be pointing the finger about taxes needing to be paid more.
Over $100K in unpaid back taxes for the woman who designed AOC's Tax the Rich dress. And I mean, it's you know, the hypocrisy and the irony and the absurdity of all of this. You keep expecting for it to end. And I will say, in the one hand, like, it is totally unexpected for you to be able to do research, probably, although AOC staff should know who she's consulting with. But I'm sure she probably doesn't know that she owes $100,000 in back taxes, AOC herself. But imagine being the dress designer. She has to know that she owes back taxes,
this is kind of like the mask thing when people are hypocritical, when they go party with the masks on. I want them to be able to party without 100%. Masks on. And I think the IRS is a monstrosity and harasses people, and the tax code is intentionally opaque to benefit certain, interests.
It's a total mess.
All that.
Yes.
But if you're going to lecture people about it, you'd think you'd find somebody who wouldn't necessarily have this specific baggage.
It's a pretty big skeleton in the closet.
And it's just class warfare rhetoric. The problem, it really just, folks, it comes down to very basic human emotions here. Class warfare stuff works because people either are exploiting envy of those who are upset about others doing well, or there are a lot of very well-off people who are very insecure about that accumulation, whether they inherited it or they feel like they, exploited people to get there, whatever it may be. And they think by mouthing the preferred slogans of Marxism while they're at the Met Gala, they buy themselves some social insurance.
This is where every time I look at the tax code, I think more and more about how right Steve Forbes was back in the day when he ran on the concept of a flat tax. We
absolutely
just all pay.
Correct.
Off of postcard, everybody knows what they make. You pay 15% of what I think it was 15% flat tax. I was talking about this with my wife the other night. As we have gotten older and as our taxes have become more complicated, people have this idea that taxes are easy. You could go to 10 different tax accountants. I could right now, and they would give me 10 different numbers that I owe the IRS at the end of the year. It's not just me. There's tons of people like me. It's a total joke. What you got for us?
Clay, right now, if you haven't tried Rough Greens for your pooch, everybody, you gotta get it going. Margaret writes in from Altamont, New York. Both of our dogs love Rough Greens from the very beginning. They finish everything and then lick their bowls clean. They seem to have more energy also. We are both very impressed. Look, dog food is dead food. There are no live nutrients in it, and dogs need live nutrition just like we do. That's why Rough Greens is an additive. You put it into your dog's existing dog food. So there's not any change in what your routine is with the dog food. You put this into your dog's food. It's got vitamins, probiotics, enzymes, omega oils, and antioxidants. We give it to Tallulah, the Frenchie, in my family. She's doing great. She's 12 years old. She's an old lady, but she's doing great. The folks at Rough Greens are so confident your dog will love it. They'll send you a bag free. That's right, your first bag free. All you have to do is go to Rough Greens, R-U-F-F, roughgreens.com/Clay and Buck. That's right, roughgreens.com/Clay and Buck. First bag free. All you pay is shipping.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. And one of the things we try to do on a regular basis on the show is share actual factual data with you. And one of the big battles that everybody's fighting all over the country right now is what sort of restrictions, if any, should exist for kids as they return to school. And this is a battle we've been fighting for a long time. And I think it continues to get illuminated based on the decisions that are made that are flagrantly hypocritical at, for instance, the Emmys last night, where all of this Hollywood celebrities can show up. They cannot wear masks, although all of the people serving them have to wear masks. But it's in direct conflict with the requirement that all kids ages 2 and up have to wear masks in Los Angeles. And the way that this is justified, Buck, is by saying, oh, kids are under a lot of danger from COVID. And I want to give a credit to a Twitter account at Kirpin.
That's my man, Phil.
Yeah, Phil Kirpin. He went through and did this, and I'm going to read some of this data for you, and it's pretty amazing. These are the number of deaths from COVID, with COVID, I should say, because, again, I'll explain that in a moment, but from January of 2020 all the way up to September 11th of 2021, so almost 2 years, all right? And in that 2 years, for instance, let me give you some of these numbers. There are right now in the United States, and this is crazy as someone who had kids, there are 3.9 million, roughly, Buck, two-year-olds. 3.9 million kids age two-year-old in the United States. How many of them do you think have died with COVID in the past year and change?
Less than 100?
Seven.
Yep.
And again, I want you guys to listen to some of these ages. And again, I understand that every death of a child is a tragedy. I'm not trying to minimize the death of a child for any reason. I've got three kids. But when you are a parent, assessing risk for your children is a big part of being a parent, one of the most important parts. So I'm picking random young ages here. Buck, there are over 4 million kids age 6 years old. How many kids have died with COVID who are 6 years old since COVID began in this country?
50.
Six.
Ah.
4 million 6 year olds.
Clay, right. I mean, we're going to keep going through this.
Random.
The numbers,
like,
it's
crazy.
It's horrific, right? It's horrific how exaggerated the media has created this risk situation because we have so few children. I mean, we look at a flu season, an average flu season, and how many kids are dying
in any
given year.
Kids are more likely to die in an average flu.
Every death is a tragedy. Every death is horrible. But every vehicular death is a tragedy. Every drowning is a tragedy. I mean, we can't live like this. This is why I get so frustrated by this. Because we're looking at a world where people are no longer being reasonable or rational. And I just want to scream and throw something at the wall. I mean, because you're putting out these numbers.
Yes.
How many people, Clay, do you think know that not even less? I keep thinking it's less than 100 because that seems like, I know it's a very small number, that less than 10 in these different age groups have died for this of the millions of kids infected?
It's pretty wild. I mean, and those numbers are representative. There's over 4 million 10-year-olds, 9 have died. And again, this is with COVID because sadly, a huge percentage of kids that are dying with COVID. Most of these kids are really unhealthy and have multiple different comorbidities that are factoring in here. But Buck, it goes all the way up. I mean, there's not even an age range. You have to go all the way up to 37 years old. And by the way, right now there are, according to this, almost 4.4 million 37-year-olds in the country right now. That's the first age range where over 1,000 people have died with COVID.
Clay, how can you make people, I mean, this is why, when you told me the number 7, I sit here and go, and yet they're making everybody, all these kids, mask up. And they're about to make all these kids get the vaccine. For 7 children total in an age group where you have hundreds of thousands, if not a few
millions of kids.
We're being made to make medical policy for 1 in a million, and that's not an exact, for 1 in a million odds of things happening.
Yes.
This can paralyze society if we actually do this.
If this is the standard, I mean, to put it into perspective, sadly, as many 2-year-olds in this country have died of COVID as Joe Biden's administration just killed in a drone strike in Afghanistan.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Unbelievable.
I mean, and so this graphic, I would encourage you to go check it out because Phil Kirpin did good work here putting together the death rate. And by the way, we talk about how stratified by age the death rate with COVID is. Buck, if you are over 85 years old, 187,000 of the COVID deaths are in those 85 years or older.
Which, and if you look at their, look, I mean, if you look at expected life, if you look at life expectancy for people over 85, you know, we all know that we're all heading there. We all share this. I mean, by the way, if we're blessed enough to make it to 85, yes. Right? But, you know, we're all going to be at the point at some point in our lives. This is the certainty of the human condition where any infection or virus or flu or cold, you know, could create pneumonia or create a truly serious condition, a health condition. And so when you see the age stratification data, Clay, this should be something that makes people who are not at high risk much more comfortable with accepting those risks. But this is why the point that Bill Maher made, what was it, a week ago, that you have libs who are afraid to leave their homes. The part of this that I can't begin to wrap my head around, I understand the control freaks, the control mechanism people, the Democrat Party leveraging. I know how and why they're doing that. Clay, it's the parents of a five-year-old who watch as an airline attendant pulls a mask over a child with learning disabilities, yes. Or, you know, with you know, needs extra care. The child is screaming and writhing in frustration and discomfort and anxiety. How can any parent not see that and say something has gone horrifically wrong in our society, in America? We're the only country, and hat tip to Carol Markowitz at the New York Post for writing about this today. She says that it's now sadism. We are the only country in the world that is doing this to children at a very young age. The only one. Europe does not do what we do anymore.
And I worry, and this is for kids across the spectrum of ages, what are we teaching kids about being able to assess risk? What are we teaching kids of a young age about being terrified of, you know, airborne particles that might surround them from others? How are we expecting them to be reasonable in their analysis of risk when the adults and the leadership in our country has so fundamentally failed them? I don't know the answer to that, Buck. We come back, by the way, we'll take some of your calls as we continue to roll on 1-800-282-2882. But I want to tell you how you can save a ton of money on your cell phone bill. AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, it doesn't matter. You can keep your same phone. You can keep your same number. But you can save up to $50 or more a month. How much of a difference could that make in your life? We're talking about $800 a year. I'm using it in my own family. Pure Talk is taking care of my 13-year-old. They can take care of your family, too. It's incredibly easy to switch. No overages. You get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. Just $30 a month. Buck, it's a no-brainer. Save $800. How do people do it?
So easy. From your cell phone, right now, obviously, if you're driving, make sure you pull over. Do this in a moment. But for those of you who aren't driving, dial #250. And say Pure Talk. Just from your phone right now, dial #250, say the words Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250, say Pure Talk. And remember this offer, unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data, just $30 a month. So when you dial #250 and say Pure Talk, you'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk.
Yeah, this used to happen a lot. Recent arrivals here, brand new, in love with the program.
From the DNA of America's Anchorman, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, inspired by Rush on the EIB Network.
Rolling along here on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck here in NYC, Clay out in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are going to be linking up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
It's going to be awesome.
But a few weeks. Very excited for this. Although now Clay might have to save a seat for me on this, like Clay's football fun bus that he gets to travel around with everywhere. So it looks like a good time. They didn't do the one with the photo of you with the six pack, right? They did the on the side of the bus?
Oh, no, no. It's me looking insanely ripped. So you'll see the bus.
Oh, it is. It is photo. Oh, yeah. I didn't mean the beer kind of six pack. I meant the abdominal, the rectus abdominis
six pack. They put that up. Yeah.
Good stuff.
My face, my head on a super ripped guy's body. So we're going to be in Nashville, which is going to be easy for me this weekend for the Georgia-Vanderbilt game, my hometown, so I don't have to travel.
How's Vandy going to do it? Are all the Vandy guys on the sidelines going to be reading Shakespeare and studying for their calculus exams?
The line is 35 points.
Oh, wow. Even I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably going to be an ugly performance for Vanderbilt. But it'll be nice. And then we'll be in Tuscaloosa. We're going to be at the Innisfree, which is a really popular bar in Tuscaloosa. And I know we got a ton of listeners who are in Alabama or Mississippi or just people who are fans of football games.
It will be my first time. I have been to Baghdad more times than I have been to Tuscaloosa. So, true fact. So, I would love it if a lot of our listeners in Alabama would show up for game day and be at that tailgate. And I'll be running. I will be the guy with the very large head and the swoop of poofy hair.
That's pretty common in Alabama, though. Your hair will fit in.
That's right. You know, I might walk around in like some seersucker pants and some sandals, like with a baseball hat on, like some of the frat guys.
Yeah.
All right. David in Baxter, Minnesota. We said we'd get some calls. What's up, David?
Hey, no, like, guys, you know, when I hear the sycophantic lapdogs in the media asking why, you know, the Don Lemons and the Joy Reid types asking why us rubes out here are resisting this vaccination, I'm going to give them a few reasons just real quick. Last week, the epidemiologist that you had, the information that he gave was very eye-opening. They are the ones, the vaccinated are the ones who are driving this pandemic, and we all knew it intuitively, but now there's proof. They are the other reason. Congress exempted themselves from the vaccine mandate.
That is pretty wild.
And then they tell international flyers that coming in, you have to be vaccinated, but then they let hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens over our border, no vax, no mask, pick them up, disperse them to 48 states, let them spread the virus in perpetuity. Those are just a few of so many reasons why I will not comply. And you know what? I work for a company that has over 3,000 employees nationwide. I haven't heard a word yet about vaccine mandates, but I can promise you this. The minute that they say I have to get vaccinated, I'm going to make them fire me. I'm not going to quit. And when they do, I've got a lawsuit ready for them. And if everyone took that position and made these woke corporations pay actual money to defend these lawsuits, thousands and thousands, what else do we have? What other recourse do we have? Make these companies pay the price for their capitulation.
David is fired up, man. David, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
We should say, Buck, the callers that we had, the epidemiologist, Paul, I believe, who was in Canada at the time, wildly entertaining call. So many people out there responded well to it. But we're still in the hypothesis era of trying to explain the data.
We do not know.
We don't know for
we
sure
do not
why
know.
It's
And
occurring.
This is why. So when I brought up the disease in chickens, for example, Marek's disease.
Yes.
This is just an example in nature where you had a virus that essentially responded in an unexpected and worse way to a mass vaccination campaign of chickens, just to be very clear. But this can occur. The same thing with antibody-dependent enhancement, which has come up too, which is the concept of the virus actually getting almost like it's smarter and stronger and spreads better after it's come into contact with a low-level antibody response from a vaccine. Again, these are hypotheses. These are not proven. When Clay and I tell you it's proven, it's because we're looking at, you know, when he gave you the numbers on mortality for, actually people will argue about, but those are the official numbers. That's data. When we're talking about some of these other things and our caller last week, those are possible medically plausible explanations for the vast explosion of cases in the last 60 days.
And we should mention that most people in media won't even allow those hypotheses to be discussed because they go against prevailing narratives, which is actually the most anti-science thing you can do, because science is about rigorously challenging what you believe to be true to have the better truth determined, right? That's what theories, that's what the entire scientific method is. And it's like everybody's forgotten that with COVID, which, let's remind everybody, is a new virus, meaning we don't have 50 years of data to analyze in real time. We're trying to assess.
Yeah, and also, at some level, this is what I always say about the CIA. Well, what's a really important skill to CIA or in law enforcement or in any job? Know when someone's lying to you, right?
Yeah.
You know when someone
yes.
is BSing you, and you know you're being that. You know you're being Fauci'd, if you will, when they won't talk about natural immunity, when they act like, oh, yeah, it's just like the smallpox vaccine. Smallpox kills 30% of the people who
yes.
get it, and people who beat smallpox are often horribly scarred. It's a terrible disease that wiped out over 90% of the native population of the Americas after the colonial era. And they act like COVID. Anyway, we know we're being BS, and that's a big part of it. Rick, speaking of not thinking that things are on the up and up with some of the numbers, Rick in Claremont, Florida's got some thoughts. What's up, Rick?
Yeah, they keep talking about it. The unvaccinated, the 90% of people who are unvaccinated are the ones catching COVID, and that's a lie. I tested positive 11 days ago. I fully vaccinated, still got it. And when I went down to the Redesivir, Regeneron, whatever you want to call it, thing that DeSantis set up here in Florida for us to go get treatment, 18 people in the waiting room after we got the treatment, every one of them was vaccinated who had tested positive for COVID.
I appreciate you letting us know that, because we were saying earlier in the show, these monoclonal antibodies, which are being restricted in terms of being shipped to Florida, the DeSantis press secretary tweeted out 60% of the people receiving monoclonal antibodies in Miami have already been vaccinated.
Yeah. Rick, did you give us everything you wanted to on that one? We got about 30 seconds.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Saying, that's a big lie when they say 90% are unvaccinated. Yeah. That's a lie.
Thank you, Rick. I mean, this is what, Clay, this is...
It's 90-day-old data. That's what...
They're using the old data, and they're saying if you were to gauge it from August to, you know, June, maybe the beginning of July... Yeah, well, that's when you had the vaccines
yes.
operating at maximum protection. The data for August is going to look, when people actually compile it and look at it, very different.
Same
about
for
who's,
September.
Not just who's, I'm sorry, September, not
yeah.
just who's getting sick, but how sick and how vaccinated, what percentage are vaccinated. We'll come back to this because we're not done with Fauci here either. Clay and I want to talk to you about that and much more coming up on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.